What's up, everybody? Welcome to the CaliCast. I'm Uriah Faber, the California Kid. Be spitting some knowledge, telling stories, and having a good time. What's up, guys? Welcome back to MMAU. Uriah Faber here, and today I'm joined from a blast from the past, last season of the CaliCast, Coach Lee Kemp. If you guys have an opportunity to go back and check out that podcast, it's pretty awesome. We get to learn a lot about Coach Kemp and his incredible story. Some highlights from that, being a multiple-time world champion and an Olympian the year they actually dropped the Olympics, on top of one of the most impressive wrestlers in the history of the United States and possibly the world. Also an Olympic coach, and has been a coach at Team Alpha Male as well in the mixed martial arts world. And now he's able to coach his son, who's just made a jump to another school. So, Coach Kemp, thanks for being with us.
Awesome. You're right. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. And like I said, last time we covered, just a lot about you. And I'll let you kind of reintroduce yourself and talk about your kind of wrestling experience in a second here. But this is MMAU, so we're trying to educate people about the history, the incremental parts of being a mixed martial artist or being involved in the mixed martial arts industry. And we've covered things like, you know, protecting your credit, building your credit. We're going to talk about your first house. We're also looking into the different parts that make up mixed martial arts, which wrestling being one of the biggest ones, hands down, is an important topic to touch on. We just had Tuss on, who's here with us, one of the showrunners here, who actually was brought up in a Thai, traditional Thai type of gym, where her father, you know, that was his mainstay of business. So we got a peek inside of that world as mm-hmm. well. So today's purpose is to, of course, catch up with you, see what you're up to, and talk a little bit about the legend of Lee Kemp, but give an inside look at wrestling and how people get involved in the sport, some of the most successful groups throughout time, whether it be countries or, different areas of the United States, how people survive as they continue past school-level wrestling into international, and what it can mean to be a world champion or an Olympic champion, everything under the sun with wrestling. So first off, Coach, why don't you talk a little bit about your upbringing and where you came up and how wrestling got involved in your life?
For me and for a lot of wrestlers, we sort of all got into wrestling sometimes by accident. When I say accident, back in the 70s or 60s, actually, when I was really young, but in the 70s when I went to high school, wrestling wasn't a big sport. The big sports were obviously basketball and football, and I went out for all those, but I wasn't very good, and I probably didn't grow very much.
This is the story. You can't play basketball, so then you have to wrestle. That's not what we're trying to promote here, but sadly, it's kind of true.
I was looking for a chance to play.
Yeah.
And wrestling was a chance that you could, your ability to play was, you had 100% control of that.
Yeah.
A lot of the team sports, your coach would pick and choose sometimes, and you wouldn't play the whole game typically anyway, because you'd always have, they'd be rotating people in and out, whether it was basketball, whether it was football. Wrestling, I noticed everybody was, it was just you. You walk out there and it's all you. You take 100% of the win, you take 100% of the loss. And that really appealed to me. So, with my earlier comments about wrestling, a lot of people jump into wrestling like that, but they quickly jump back out of it. It's really tough.
What do they say? They say, I don't know if it's whether the sport chooses the wrestler or the wrestler chooses the sport. It's definitely a unique individual that can last and be, someone that loves what we do, because it's friggin' hard.
It is. And, I'll just divert a little bit to MMA, because I had a chance to be involved in the MMA world at your gym and at Team Alpha Male. I was a good wrestler, a great wrestler, but, man, I don't know what it would have been like to learn the other disciplines. And when you add to it someone's actually trying to hurt you, with officials not going to stop it until, you're unconscious basically, yeah. or you're, you know, so that's a whole nother mentality.
Right. And so the way wrestling plays into the current landscape of mixed martial arts is it's one of the must have disciplines,
yeah.
some sort of grappling art. And, like you said, and I like, you know, we had had a discussion earlier today about this is it takes a long time to get good at one thing, let alone all the things. So, wrestling is one of the main things that you can point to in the mixed martial arts world and say, hey, successful wrestlers do well in MMA, and successful Muay Thai practitioners do well in MMA, mm-hmm. successful BJJ practitioners do well in MMA. And now we're getting a blend of everything. But, what is it you think about the wrestling that translates well to mixed martial arts?
I think the biggest thing that wrestling gives you is body awareness.
Yeah.
Because the idea of wrestling is being on top.
Yep.
And not only being on top, to manipulate and maneuver your opponent to get them on their back. So right. that's
a place. There's a place where you're not supposed to go,
yeah.
and your job is to put them in a place where they cannot go, and make sure that even though they know they're not supposed to go there, you're going to make them do that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what makes wrestlers so good at MMA. Even though you can fight off your back in mixed martial arts, still a wrestler has a good skill, a good knowledge of how to move their body to get off their back or even put the other person on their – because it's still not a bad position to be
right.
on top. Even though, from what I could see, even though you're in the guard position, that's not a horrible position to be in. You know, if you're
right.
if you're the top wrestler, you could have someone really skilled that could beat you there. But still, wrestlers like being on top, and they understand how to be on top. They understand how to keep themselves on top, and they understand how to get takedowns.
Yeah.
So those are big, big pluses in fighting.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you know, and like you said, I've heard someone quote you saying this was, look, if I was fighting MMA and you know, we can get into your story a little bit about, you know, your dominance as a wrestler in, you know, the world championships and, you know, your win over Dan Gable, who's a legend in our sport, was actually just awarded the award of freedom, right? By Donald Trump.
It's just amazing. Highest civilian honor you can have as a civilian American.
Right. And it was for his wrestling prowess, what he was able to do in the Olympics. No one scored a point on him, and then he beat the Russian 3-0, and then he went on to be an incredible coach and helped develop the lives of people. And Trump, who we talked about, was actually an athlete on his own right and also a fan of wrestling, also probably trying to win some votes by taking a hero out of Iowa and holding him on a pedestal. But nonetheless, gave him that. No one can take that away from Gable. I mean, add that to the list of Dan Gable. But so Coach Kemp was coached by Dan Gable, but also prior to that was had the ability right after Coach Gable won his Olympic medal, the one that he was just awarded for, amongst other things, had a win against him. And how old were you when that happened?
I was 18.
18.
And he was 26.
Yeah. And the best part about that story, and again, you guys got to go back to see the past CaliCast on Coach Kemp, was Kemp had the self-belief. This is an opportunity to beat a guy that he had looked up to and learned from in the past. And nobody thought Kemp could do it. None of the spectators, his teammates, Dan Gable, anybody, except for him. And so he was going out there to win when most people kind of laid down in those scenarios, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's that way in life, too. You see people
yeah.
that don't attack something with all their heart, and you see it, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
And I was that type of person who would attack something with everything, with all my heart at least, you know?
Right. So you're 18, and Gable's fresh off of his undefeated career in the Olympics, and they have a dual meet, and you win the match. That's another great story. Go back and watch that story. But just to put it in perspective of where Coach Kemp lands on the wrestling prowess of the history of the United States, that was one big moment. But the thing I like about wrestling, and I like it about football, lacrosse, basically any sport, the ones I love at least, it is simulated war. I mean, it really is a war. It's like, okay, here's football. I've got the lieutenant, the coach, who's got his soldiers, and he's got the lead soldier who's calling the plays with direction from him, and they're playing this thing, and here's our territory, here's your territory. We're going to do our best with our people to get into your territory and invade your space, and you got to try to stop us, right? And that's what basketball is. That's what lacrosse is. That's what football is, soccer. You know, then you break that down. Now it's boxing. We're going to stand here and we're going to beat the crap out of each other until one person is unconscious or everybody can see who won, you know. And wrestling is that to the utmost. Wrestling, boxing, Muay Thai, I would say probably jiu-jitsu, and there's some other ones in there, are blended to become mixed martial arts, but in their own right, they're their own simulated death match, their own simulated game of war with your technique and your skill and your mindset and your muscle and everything going against theirs. When you break it down in that scenario, it becomes a lot simpler. It becomes a lot simpler to want to get up and get better every day, you know? Like if you put it in that kind of sense. And one of the coolest things I saw, Coach, when you came into the room, you were talking about, man, if I was fighting, I think when I pick guys up, I would just slam them on their head, right? And so he starts thinking about, how am I going to actually try to physically harm these people and avoid the rules of wrestling? Yeah. So what was that like to realize, you know, now you have to think in a whole different mindset?
It was very different because in wrestling, the goal is to outmaneuver your opponent primarily, but you can't hurt them.
Right.
You could actually be disqualified if you hurt your opponent. If you hurt your opponent with a premeditated intent, you'd be disqualified.
Right. And what are some of the moves that are illegal in wrestling that
slamming.
Make sure that? Slamming's
you,
one.
You can't
a full Nelson that attacks the spine.
Going against the joint, like if you had an arm bar or, you know, whatever, a wrist and you're turning it. You know, any kind of wrist locks, joint
right.
locks, knee locks, neck cranks, choking.
It's all illegal.
It's all illegal.
In fact, so people aren't dying.
They aren't dying, and they're not passing out, and they're able to go home to their families after.
Right.
So as a wrestler, I remember a few times slamming somebody, not, you know, because I just did a lift,
yeah,
came down a little hard, and they stopped the match. I was in the national tournament. One of my goals was to be a national champion. I hadn't achieved that yet. So
right.
I'm in the quarterfinals against Penn State. I lift this guy up. He hits the mat. I didn't think it was a slam. The referee blew the whistle, gave the other guy a point, penalty. And if that guy couldn't compete, I would have been disqualified.
Did he get up and compete?
Well, this is, I hate to say this publicly, but the coach, and he's passed away now, but he was a legend coach like Gable, but not the same uh-huh. level of success at Penn State. He looked at his wrestler from his bench, and he said, smiled, he just went like, okay, man, this is it. You won, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, and really, I was crushed. I thought, I'm not going to win.
Yeah.
And then the assistant coach, a former wrestler who was a national champion, he walked in front of the coach and walked out on the mat, and I could hear him say to his wrestler, you're wrestling. You know, we're not going to win a match that way.
Huh.
And so I thought,
that's interesting. Two different perspectives.
Yes,
the young buck and the old buck.
Yes, and so that changed my thinking a little bit. You know, I became a little more conservative.
Right.
When I wrestled, not that I was a real rough wrestler, but still, I mean, you do a move, you could be disqualified.
Yeah.
So now to your real point, now if I could have mentally had that switch over to where now you can hurt somebody. My gosh, I don't know what would have happened, man. I mean,
well, you'd be rich and more famous than you already are. So you know, you've been a world champion now at mixed martial arts, like Henry Cejudo and Daniel Cormier and many other decorated wrestlers of our time that have decided to make that switch. So I just, you know, not to say coulda, woulda, shoulda, but coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Well, they didn't have it when I was young.
That's right.
It wasn't. Right. It didn't exist. If it did,
that's right.
Who knows? You know, it depends. Money will cause you to do a lot of different things.
Yeah, that's right. That being said, let's transition because, you know, that was kind of establishing why wrestling is so important in the sport. And before we move on, just some things. You said body awareness. I think partially for me, when I think why are wrestlers so well, wrestling sucks and you decide to do it on your own most of the time or continue on the path most of the time. It's a hard, hard life. You're getting skin diseases and you're getting concussions and you're getting cut and you're getting, you know, you're in a room. And I tell this to the guys all the time in our room. When I see guys lollydagging around while they're drilling and then some guys going with the intent to to like get better and get the most out of practice. It just puts me back in the wrestling room where there's 40 guys and there's 11 spots. And you're friends with these guys. Maybe you're not friends with them, but they're your family and camaraderie. But you're also after the same thing. And you know if somebody's half-assing it. And you know if you can get the better of them every single time. So I had to put that in perspective of these guys. Guys, hey, you guys are half-assing it here in practice. First off, what do you want? You know, because the guys you're going against want the same thing. They want to be the baddest dude on the planet. So I think the mental side of the wrestling makes a big difference for wrestlers on top of the body awareness. And the last thing is the importance of coaching. And the one thing I've seen the biggest difference, and you can understand this, and maybe you can relate or say, yeah, well, some guys are like that, some guys aren't. Wrestling coaches are, for the most part, really, really selfless people, in my opinion. Like, it's not about them per se.
I agree.
It's they're about teaching them their moves, and they're about teaching a mentality, and they're about trying to get these through. There's no money involved. What I've seen with boxing and even MMA, these coaches get a little glimpse of money or fame or something. And it's like, especially with social media stuff, and it's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde shows up. It's like, went in because you want to coach. And next thing you know, you're like, oh, well, I look pretty good on TV. Next thing you know, then it's like, you got your face on in there, and then you're like saying the right thing because you know it's going to get replayed. And I'm like,
yeah,
man, I just wish the coaches of mixed martial arts could take apart and go back to the roots of wrestling coaching, because talking about some of the most humble people that you know, and the heart and mindset in the right spot, but understanding the importance of coaching and the importance of having an open mind, I think that's another wrestling thing. You know, you can get real. It's easy to be humbled in the wrestling world. But like I said, we're transitioning into money will make you do weird things or great things or bad things, whatever. How does, and we talked to Tuss about this a little bit, how does a wrestler make it once they're out of the covenants of school related sports? So we go and say, okay, I'm going to school. I'm going to be wrestling for the school, which is paid for by the school, and it's something that's offered at the school. Then there's college. You either play or you don't in college. You either wrestle or you don't in college. Then there's the next step, and you were able to do this. Ryan Loader, who we'll have on here as well, is now making the transition to MMA. How does that look for a guy that's transitioning in your time, and maybe if you have an idea of now, what does it look like for these guys that are making the jump from college to, okay, now I'm going to pursue a world championship in a Olympic run or whatever it may be.
Even in my day in the 70s, before clubs, regional training centers, you know, they didn't exist, you know, RTCs, they call them now, but regional training centers, but a version of them did exist. So your point is when you finish college.
And you want to pursue wrestling. First off, why the heck would you want to pursue wrestling?
There's no money in it.
Yeah, why would, like, what is going on through someone's head at that point? What do they have to gain?
That's a good point. It was very pure then, because even as someone like Gable was who we were all chasing.
Right.
You know, when I was a young guy, everybody was chasing Gable. When he won his gold medal, there was nothing. That's why he didn't wrestle beyond the 72 Olympics. He didn't go after two Olympic gold medals and many world. He got a job right after that, you know, because he got married, got a job.
Right.
So there was nothing after that. But for a guy like me who, I wanted to pursue more after college. Well, first of all, you should pick a college that has an emphasis on the international style of wrestling, meaning there's some former coaches there that were international wrestlers that are now coaching. And that was the case at Wisconsin. Our assistant coach, when I went to Wisconsin, was Russ Hullickson, and he ended up being an alternate on the 72 Olympic team that Gable won the gold on. His name was Russ Hullickson, so he was actually in that process already. Huh. He did make the 76 team while I was in college. He won a silver medal, and I trained with him a lot.
Right.
So, and plus, he encouraged all of our athletes, you know, even though we were in college, to try out for teams. Like, I made a world team, a junior world team, you know, age group teams, things like that. And then this was the big thing, and I'll make a joke about this, but when I got my son into wrestling, when the season ended, you know, it's just a season from, you know, November to March. He's done thinking, okay, I'm done. I'm like, wait a minute now. I kind of want you to go to this one club and train. He's like, okay, he went 1 or 2 days. Okay, I'm done. No, this goes all the way through the summer. And then, but when the summer ends, I got to go right back into the season. Yeah, that's the idea. It's year round. Yeah. So Russ created this environment where you're training year round. And that's a whole, but all sports do it now, as you may remember. Right. Back in my day and in your day, it wasn't year-round. You didn't do football year-round. You didn't do any sport year-round. Now you do all sports year-round if you want to be really good. I trained some wrestlers that do play football, and this guy's Bobby Palin, his name is. He plays all year-round. He trains all year-round.
Yeah.
Scouts are looking at him all year-round, and he knows wrestling gives him an edge.
Right.
And he's a heavyweight, and he wants to be a, you know, state champ if he can, but football is his main sport. So the point is, you have to go to a place where it's a year-round emphasis.
Right.
And all colleges now that are D1, I think that's a prerequisite. When they hire a coach, you know, they want that coach to have a year-round focus for his team. And so that has to be an absolute must. And you have to be willing to compete.
But how are these guys surviving? How are they putting food on the table? How are they paying rent? I mean, are they getting an ugly girlfriend and mooching off them? Are they
probably
they calling their parents? Are they working a job in addition?
That's a great question. In my day, you had a part-time job, and the job typically was coaching wrestling, like a summer camps. So you could do, you've done a string of summer camps.
Right.
So you make a little bit of money doing that in between your wrestling. And then when the season comes back again, then you become on the staff of the college as a graduate assistant coach. If you're taking a couple graduate classes, which we all did, whether we were pursuing a graduate degree or not, you took a class or two.
Right.
And so but it was not a lot of money. There was no prize money like it is now. There was no endorsement money like there is now. So in my day, you just kind of did it that way.
So this is an interesting parallel, I guess I would say, because we just had Tuss on that talked about the Muay Thai world and what it's like. In the Muay Thai world, they'll drop off, and you guys can date back on the MMAU Cali cast about the Thai culture, but families are poor, broke in Thailand, national sport, they drop their kid off or convince a camp that, hey, our kid has some potential through the regionals. They'll drop them off at 5, 7 years old. They'll exchange food and training, and they become, you know, prize fighters as little kids. You know, they're bet on, they're training full time. And meanwhile, in the wrestling world, you know, wrestling is being, over in the U.S. at least, they're being encouraged to, you know, go to graduate school. and they're saying these kids, you know, the longer and more intense their training is, the lower their IQ. You know, you see a real effect on the brain, which is kind of a scary thing. And I wonder about, you know, in everything, that's the highest level. At the highest level of Muay Thai, you're the top breadwinner in the gym, which has you've been brought up in, and you probably get a bigger room, and you get a little cut of your earnings, but most goes back to the gym, etc. There's no prize fighting in the wrestling. It's opportunities to get jobs.
There is.
Yeah, is there
in 2020? There is. In the 70s. There was, the way I explained it, there was none of that. There was no.
So let's talk about today. What do you know about today's wrestling, and how are people surviving?
Well,
if they want to pursue wrestling beyond, because you can't be a professional wrestler.
Well, colleges have created this entity called Regional Training Center, which is really kind of a head fake in a sense, meaning it's not part of a university, but it's kind of at the university. And they draw that line to beat NCAA rules and regulations. Because the NCAA, they have these rules on when you can train. Like once the season ends, you're not supposed to have coaching anymore until the next season.
Gotcha.
Well, now they have this RTC entity created, which is a head fake, really. But it's,
when you say a head fake,
it's well, you're training a lot of times in the same room.
Yeah.
You know, the like, coaches, the same coaches are there. But so they hire different coaches.
Gotcha.
The RTC supposedly coaches.
They're finding a way.
Yeah, they're finding a way.
Yeah.
So, but the head-to-head coach has turned into more of a CEO, I will say that.
Gotcha.
In my day, the Gables were in the room teaching a lot of technique. Now the head coach is kind of orchestrating it. And this head coach will have an RTC, have RTC coaches that get paid from a budget that they raise money for that's separate from the university. They try to keep that line there.
Right.
Then you've got the university fundraising that funds the university, but they have this RTC. So as a young, as a wrestler like me, for example, wanting to continue wrestling, I'd be hired by an RTC somewhere.
Right.
It wouldn't be a lot of money, but it would be enough money to for me to train. The goal is for me to go there to train. I bring prestige to the university kind of as a secondary thing, but primarily prestige to that RTC. If I'm good, if I make a world team and I win medals, then it might draw a great high school wrestler to want to go to that college knowing he or she has access to that RTC.
Interesting. Okay.
So it's kind of a, like you said, they'll find a way. So there are opportunities for wrestlers who have skill to get latched onto an RTC. And then now the RTC will fund your training. They'll send you to tournaments. They'll send you to, you know, competitions. And now the rules have changed that our national governing body for wrestling will actually pay our athletes for winning medals. Like if you win an Olympic gold medal, our USA Wrestling Organization, which is part of our country's sanctioned, it's all above board, $250,000 to being an Olympic champion.
Yeah, I remember actually having the conversation with Henry Cejudo 10 years ago in our gym.
He missed that, though.
And he was saying, because he was saying, well, I don't know if I'm going to do MMA. There's no money in it. And at the time, I was the world champ.
Yeah.
And I was seeing pretty good money with endorsements and the fighting and owning a gym. Mm-hmm. And I was piecing it together. I was making pretty good money. And then he said to me, like, you know, they're saying, I think I might go back and wrestle. They're saying they're going to give me, you know, I think it was 150 grand or 200 grand. I think they wanted him just to train because he was the champion. They're going to maybe pay him. And I was like, well, that's pretty good money, but that's not, you know.
It's not a lot of money.
That's not a lot of money. But to him, it was like
it was all
this big opportunity to make that cash. So, yeah, it puts things in perspective. Now, fast forward, he's the Triple C, the cringe Mr. Cringe, or whatever he calls himself, and he's doing pretty well, and MMA worked out for him. But back then, that was like a very, very enticing thing. Now
he would have made no money if he stayed in wrestling,
right?
Zero, nothing.
And the awareness of his brand would have been
zero
as well. Even though he was
great,
the most decorated wrestler, the youngest gold medalist in USA history.
And he was young when he left wrestling.
Yeah.
When he won that gold medal in 2008, he was young.
Yeah.
He could have, well, he...
On top of the world with no cash.
Yes, and he could have come back. He could have, and he could have won a second one, but there was... John Smith is another example, and he was a lot younger, of course. John Smith won. He's our most decorated American wrestler.
Right. What did he win?
Six world titles. Two Olympic gold medals and four world championships.
Wow.
All in a row. And he made his money coaching, though, at Oklahoma State.
What are some of these? We got Cael Sanderson, Dan Gable, John Smith. Who are some of the other big-name coaches?
Tom Brands at Iowa.
How much can, like, I heard Cael Sanderson got over $1 million deal.
I've heard lots of different numbers thrown around, but I think the truth is he got offered a lot of money. He got for wrestling, and I think his straight salary is – well – this is what I know for sure. I know he's the highest paid coach in the country.
Gotcha.
And so, but with saying that, I know that the coach at Wisconsin, Chris Bono, because it's a state university.
I had a video cassette tape of Bono wrestling. I think it was Ironside. Is he the same weight as Ironside?
He's a little bit bigger. He's probably around 145-ish.
Okay. But I remember I watched Bono. He was a friggin' bull, that guy.
Yeah, national champ. Great. Yeah. In fact, he went on that circuit. He competed in the world championships. He was our national.
Yeah.
But when he took the job at Wisconsin 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it was a published salary of like 250 grand a year, which is
still
a lot.
It's so great to follow your passion.
And I applied for the head coaching job at Wisconsin back in 1985. The salary was like 40 grand.
Yeah.
And I was already
I was the third assistant or the second assistant at UC Davis, and I got paid $7,000.
Which is why
I became a fighter. Well, one of the reasons I was doing it to become a fighter. I was getting paid $7,000.
What was the head coach making though?
I mean, he must have been making 45,
which is
50,
about right at the time, yeah.
Maybe something like that. And then yeah,
but you could live on that. I mean, you could. Not that you wanted to.
I could live on it because I was selling Alpha Male t-shirts and I was busting tables at Inc. and I was coaching kids at the wrestling camps.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, and I was living well below my means, yeah. You know, which I preach to these guys to do. So, absolutely. So let me ask you this, because this brings it back to the difference between you and I. Mm-hmm. Me as a wrestler, I started when I was in the seventh grade. Or it started in the eighth grade, got my butt kicked, caught the bug, got a passion for it, got pretty good, was top 12 in the state, mm-hmm. didn't place in the state, went to UC Davis, was top 12 in the nation, mm-hmm. but still pretty much a mediocre mm-hmm. wrestler per credentials goes. Then we have you on the other side. Now, if I would have pursued an international career, it would have been a lot of busting tables, a lot of getting work in, probably getting beat up for a while. But I feel like I could have done it if I would have mm-hmm. focused, getting a late start and everything else. But there's got to be, and I talked about the Muay Thai world, where there's the kids that are probably not going to be very good. And there's the mid-tier guys that could or couldn't mm-hmm. or good training partners. And then there's the top dogs that get more attention and more food and bigger room or whatever the things that come along with it. How is it for the different levels of a wrestler that's trying to do international? I mean, some of these guys never see the gold medal at any of these international tournaments, but yet there's a lot of people competing. So what is that? There's like the no chance guys. I mean, don't tell them that, and I would never say that. Mm-hmm. Then there's like the almost guys, and there's the top dogs. It's just a harder road for these other guys, right? Same thing.
It's you're right. It's an impossibility, but you have people willing to fill all those slots, even the no chancers.
Right. Ton of them. They come through the team too.
Ton of them.
And you never tell them. It's like, man, great. Guys will be here 11 years.
I think there's an intrinsic, there's something intrinsic about just being part of the team.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just being on the team. And like if you get the ability to go to the Olympic Training Center and just be the third or fourth tier guy, making no money, but you pay your way there, but you become a workout partner. There's a guy that I know that was John Smith's workout partner at Oklahoma State University.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he even made the varsity, actually. But he was a tough guy. He worked hard. And whenever John Smith needed a workout partner, whether it was 2 in the morning or whatever, because John worked out at weird times because he wanted to get mentally tough, he called this guy up, and this guy was always there for him.
Yeah.
And so this guy is successful today, and he cherishes that time he spent with John Smith. So he was never going to make a team. He was never – but he went the gamut.
There's a sense of pride that he was there. There's a sense of life experience.
Yeah.
There's a relationship there that's – I mean, in Oklahoma especially, John Smith is like the president there.
Yeah,
it's like
he could run for office.
He could run for office, and he's had to have made a lot of money. What are some other ways that – I mean – okay, so there's the guy, the no chance guy, loves wrestling,
and they make no money. So those are the guys that are working all the different jobs,
and doing the oddball stuff.
They're just proud to be there,
right? Proud to be there. And then there's the guys that are kind of closer. They're probably could or couldn't make it. Odds fall in their favor, then they could have a good tournament and they hold their heads high.
And that's what keeps them motivated, because the chance that they could,
right. And then there's the top dogs that, I mean, you know you're a top dog. You're there and people know it. They treat you as such and whatnot. And there's resources become a little bit easier. I feel like that's the same in mixed martial arts. And, you know, for our gym, for example, people want to know, like, well, how do I do it? Well, first off, I get people ask me all the time, you show up. Right?
And that's the thing. A lot of guys don't even show up.
They won't show up. They'll be like, well, I've get messages from guys for years. I'm like, what do I do? What do I do?
Show up.
Well, show up, you know? And then you...
I've heard you say that.
Yeah. Then you see if you can hang.
Yeah.
Right? And you see, and this is the wrestling world too. You see if you can hang. And And that's not up to me or anyone. That's you.
Yeah.
Like, are you, like you said, like some guys will just take their ball and be like, all right, that was good. I'm out of here.
Yep. Or like an injury. I've heard guys come to you and they talk about being injured. And you look at them and say, well, you got to.
Yeah. Are you injured? Are you hurt?
Yeah.
Are you uncomfortable?
Yeah.
Like, what's the difference?
Yeah.
You know?
And if you are injured, you get yourself well and come back.
Yeah.
Show up.
Yeah. Show up. That's the biggest one. And then on top of that, there's the guys, and that's why I never say anything to anyone. You never know who's gonna
that's
turn
true.
The corner. We don't choose.
You
who's
never
the want top
to discourage
dog.
Somebody. That's
right.
True.
You don't discourage because you don't really know what's in somebody, and they could catch a fire and put enough time, etc. And you don't know anybody's individual journey, like why they're doing it. What's their motivation? Do they want to be part of something? Are they proud of that fact? Like, what is, you know, the motivation? You'd hope, you know, as a guy who runs the team and who, you know, is the owner of the team and also a coach and a mentor, you hope that these guys want to be champions, right?
You'd hope they are. You'd hope they, but you can look in just between me and you. I mean, not
yeah,
to
yeah.
the world. You can,
yeah.
if you had to write down the guys that
right.
you thought, it'd be a short list.
Right. Yeah, and that's
be a short
and
list.
That's and it takes one to know one. It's almost like game recognized game, as
yeah.
they say, right? Sometimes, yeah. but that doesn't mean that we don't have a lot of guys that are doing incredible things and having a great career, life, etc.
Sure.
for themselves, being living, getting the girl they always wanted, getting some cash in the bank, and getting on TV, buying a house, becoming a part of the sport in some other way, shape, or form. But on the wrestling side, it's a little bit different. So let's move to some of the world powers and some of the different dynamics. Like, we're talking about the U.S. We're like the, you know, U.S., China, Japan. Those are some of the European countries are pretty far along. We have resources and whatnot, and especially the U.S. What about, like, some of the other powerhouses? Who traditionally throughout time have been the powerhouses in wrestling?
Russia. And in my era, it was the Soviet Union, you know, the USSR, and now Russia, just that republic as of Russia, but it's the same thing, basically. But
right.
Russia, Iran has always been very, very strong
yeah, Iran.
In wrestling. And
I had another video cassette. I had all my cassettes. I'd have like four of them that I watched over and over again. And one was Iranian, the Iranian representative was in the world championship. And they had a chant going.
Oh, yeah.
It was like,
dun, 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 dun,
Iran.
Dun, 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 dun,
Iran.
Yes.
I was like, dang, these guys got it down.
Yeah, they do.
Just Iran. And I heard that in Iran, they have donut shops and coffee shops are like how frequent wrestling gyms are. Like, every corner there's a wrestling gym.
It's big. It goes back, I don't know how many thousands of years, you know.
And so you were saying kind of because of their country's unrest. I mean, everybody wrestles over there. I'm taking it.
Yes.
For the most part, like, that's just a wrestling community. Everybody wrestles. And but sometimes they're not even at the competitions.
They don't, because of the stuff going on in the country is so, there's so much unrest or whatever is going on politically in that country. They don't leave. Cause in 1978, I wrestled an Iranian in the finals of the world championships. And that was in 78. And in 79 and 80, they weren't there. And we didn't go to the Olympics in 80 either in Moscow, but Iran didn't go. And that Iranian was in the 81 and 82 World Championships, but did not show up in the 83 World Championships and the 84 Olympics that were in the United States. So it deprives their great athletes of a chance to be Olympic champions or world champions because of the country.
Yeah.
And just recently, an Iranian wrestler was executed.
Right.
Which was a thing. He was a good wrestler, too, but he was speaking out a little bit against...
I had reposted Dana White's...
Plea to try to help him,
which Dana White went out of his way because he identified, like, these wrestlers, these high-level wrestlers, high-level any athlete that is in combat sport is a potential guy that Dana considers his community.
Yeah.
So he did the best he could. He reached out to Trump. He had a straight line to Trump. Trump put out a tweet, which may have made it worse. Who knows?
But he did, though. I remember that.
Yeah, he put an effort to save this wrestler. And what I had heard about this situation, and Tuss, maybe you can look it up a little bit, but I heard, first and foremost, that this guy had gone to a peaceful protest. That's what I was told. Mm-hmm. And then they had him do a confession, I'm assuming after some torture and persuasion, that he had been a spy or something like that. Mm-hmm. And this could be right. This is just what I heard through the grapevine, you know. Yeah. And so he did a national confession that he was a spy or whatever after being coerced mm-hmm. into doing it. And then they executed him. And he was a national hero, really, because he was a top-level wrestler. But they made an example of him. And so that's, you know, when you look at the U.S. where we can barely, you know, everybody gets a trophy. So no one gets their feelings hurt versus, you know, government just taking a national hero and killing him to prove a point. That's kind of a scary thing. So Iran, absolutely one of the powerhouses in Russia, USSR, back when you're wrestling. I remember, and this is a great story because it's kind of comical, and I bring it up to the guys all the time in our after practice discussions. The Russian presence in wrestling was so heavy. There's a tournament, I think it's called Tbilisi.
Yes.
Tbilisi, and Coach Lenny Zaleski, my coach in college, actually wrestled in that tournament and took second. But he took second because they only took one representative from each country.
Oh, yeah.
But 1 through 9 was all Russian.
Yeah.
So he took 10th, but he took second. Right? And so
that's true.
And I'm like, wow, you know, and Coach Zaleski was a national runner-up, and he was wrestling internationally. His brother was a national champion.
Three-time
national champion. That's right. And, you know, it put things in perspective, like, why – And it goes back kind of what I think what Tuss was saying about the Thai culture was like livelihood here, drop off my kid in a place where they get food and shelter and hopefully we can all make a living a little bit better because you've got these kids now that are part of the betting. Mm-hmm. They go on in the Thai culture and et cetera, et cetera. Iran is a rough place. Russia, from what I understand with Russia, they would take kids with a little potential or from a bloodline and put them all in focus in one area mm-hmm. from a young age and just be like, okay, you're a wrestler, you're a boxer, mm-hmm. you're this, you're that, right? Is that kind of the, what you know of?
Yes.
What do you know about the international, back in your day?
That the Russians were, they have first of all, they have a lot of national pride, first of all.
Right.
Similar to like if you're a Canadian, you have this pride for hockey, you know, it's
right.
just like nationalism. So, so first they have that intense pride of wrestling.
Right.
But they start at a young age, without a lot of pressure. They just learn fundamental skills. And the kids are, from the videos I see, it looks like they're having fun.
Gotcha.
You know, and that's not much different than probably the U.S.
Right.
There's one thing I will say, though. No, I take that back. Let me retract that. We put too much emphasis on winning sometimes in the
right.
U.S. for our little kids. There's nothing wrong with having the intense desire to win when you're older or high school. But, you know, we take 5, 6, 7-year-olds and they're like national champions. And what does that really mean, you know, when you're 5 years old?
Right.
A lot of times that's just the kid that the dad's been able to push hard that could handle that work.
Right.
And then, you know, they can do 20 chin-ups at 8. So, yeah, they're going to maul another 8-year-old that's working out maybe once a week, you know. But when you start to get a little older, things start evening out. But in like countries like Russia, they don't have the tournaments and the emphasis on winning.
Gotcha.
They learn skill sets and they have fun and they learn acrobatic skills, tumbling, everything. So they learn the skill first.
Yeah.
And then they start weeding out to get to the level where they start picking and choosing who their champions, who they're going to invest in their champions. And they do have a national tournament like we do.
Huh.
And it's a barn burner, man. Now with the internet, it's out there so we can all watch it. You know, just like our national tournament, it's on the internet so they can watch ours and we can watch theirs. But 100% of the time, not always the guy that wins that represents their country.
Huh.
Because sometimes there's style conflicts. You know, you might have like one guy might be able to beat someone else, but then that guy may not be able to be a world champion, but the other guy could.
Right.
Just the way the styles work out, you know. So they want
that's a hard judgment call to make when you're just like predicting the future.
Well, in Russia, you could say you point to a guy and he can't talk back and you're out. And in America, we're going to be complaining.
I heard John Smith is like that as well.
True.
Yeah. I've heard firsthand. I know Mark Munoz wanted to make a big increase in his weight, and John wasn't let him do it. And so,
because he had somebody else who was taking care of.
Someone else. So then Mark just went on and put on 40 pounds over the summer, so he had no choice. I talked to a couple other guys that had been to Oklahoma and said, hey, I won the match, but he put this person in. But, you know, John Smith has a pretty winning recipe, and he's kind of earned his ability to do that. I know John.
And he does that, yeah.
Well, and that's a great point, what you talked about. These guys are all in. I it brought me back, and I was just telling the guys in the room. We had Coach Kieran in from CSA, and we had a bunch of great coaches in to watch sparring the other day. And we're doing kind of a roundtable. We got done early, and I was telling them I had two coaches in college. The difference with Coach Zaleski, who is coached by Dan Gable, was the conversations that were had after practice, getting the mindset and sharing story, kind of like we're doing now. And that was like a big difference in the jump from the performance of our team from him taking over, Coach Zaleski taking over. And I remember one speech in particular, because it relates to the Russian discussion, was Coach said he was in Russia, wrestling internationally, and his team went to the gym. And when they got there, there was a Russian, like two wrestlers, and they were drilling one move. They got there, put their bags down, did this, changed here, did this. And they went, had their practice, showered, left the gym. And when they came in, had their practice, everything, those two Russians were doing the same exact move.
When they left, wow.
The one move. And so, you know, he was – and – that doesn't sound like a lot of fun to me. I don't know if I could handle that myself. But on that note, that intent to master something is something that you see. And honestly, you've been a guy like that also. Like, you're like, I don't know if I've ever not finished a single leg. I remember you saying that.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a couple where you didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, not to put you on blast, but you can't remember whether or not you finished. I don't remember ever not finishing a single leg, which is, you know, that's pretty shocking. But, you know, that becoming great at something is really, really important in our sport as well, in mixed martial arts as well. And that speech was pretty spot on to that note. But some of the wrestlers that have been lifetime wrestlers, like you're talking about with the pressure, that have been through our team in particular, I know for sure Chad Mendez, Lance Palmer, Cody Garbrandt, TJ Dillashaw, Joseph Benavides, those guys started at a very young age. And I know Chad, I know his dad very well. And his dad actually did all the cabinetry in this whole house. Alvin.
Really?
Yeah, Alvin, and then my dad's Theodore. We just need a Simon. Anybody got a Simon around here? So we got Alvin, Theodore, and Alvin, Simon, and Theodore. But Alvin would take him all year round and have him training, and it paid off dividends for Chad. I mean, I think I took Chad down one time his full 10 years at our team. For those guys, at what point do you think it's good to push your kid into sport? And at what point do you think it is where you kind of like introduce, what would you say your best opinion is to if you're a parent out there that wants your kid to get involved in the sport, you get him to the safest, most, you know, fun environment, or do you say, hey, we're committing to this and you don't let him quit? Or if a kid cries every day, do you pull him out or you leave him in? Or how would you navigate that world?
Well, the thing I did, and this is all personal because it's probably going to be different for everybody, but you try to analyze where you think your child has some talent.
Right.
And because you're older, hopefully you're wise, you kind of, like, you don't throw your kid into something that they're just going to get smashed and they'll hate it, you know?
Right.
But me, as an example, my son, he seemed like he had some talent in wrestling. And I got him into, because I was always doing clinics, so he'd come with me. So
right.
I would have him just come up and just spar, just kind of play with some other wrestlers,
right?
Real wrestlers that were 8, 9 years old.
Yeah.
And I'd just kind of be watching every now and then. I could see, man, he's kind of spending a lot of time on top over there.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say anything. I would just keep it low key, but I could see he was a little talent. And
yeah,
you always get bumped a little bit, so he wouldn't cry. So if he were doing just the opposite, like hating it, crying, whatever, then of course you just have
to. You just yank him out.
You just have to. But,
gotcha.
But he seemed like he was sort of enjoying it, you know? And so then I start pushing a little bit harder. And he pushed back, but then there comes a point.
Yeah.
There's a lot of terms for these come to Jesus meetings or whatever. Whether you do it with your kid or yourself. You can't let them quit, I guess.
Because
all kids want to quit. You know, I may have wanted to quit at one point, you know, and a good coach gets you to change your mind. But my son, I remember I took him to a tougher and tougher and tougher practices with these tougher clubs. We finally hit this club, man. And actually, it was San Marino High School. John Azevedo was coaching there at the time.
John's a good friend of mine.
And this was like 3 years ago. Adam was maybe he was a junior in high school. So as a wrestling dad, you know, Christmas break, I want to go to a wrestling practice.
Yeah.
My son thinks, okay, good, I got a couple days off from wrestling practice. No, Adam, you know, we're going to get on an airplane. We're going to go from Chicago to California, and we're going to put you in this really tough practice. And he's like, and his brother and sister lived in California, so that was how I originally got him to want to go.
Right.
So he's enjoying his brother and sister. I'm like, okay, enough of that. Now we're going to go to practice. And he was kicking and screaming. He was mad. I'm not going to practice.
Funny.
I made him get in the car. We drove to San Marino, and so he begrudgingly goes through that practice. And it was a hard practice because John runs hard practice. He says, I'm not going back. He was like, I don't know, it was like 7th grade or something like that, 8th grade, maybe 9th grade. I'm not going back. I said, yeah, you are. And he's got, so we took him back to practice. He threw up after, you know, during practice too. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe this isn't a good idea.
You think he made himself throw up, or you think he
No, I think they were just working much harder than he had ever worked before.
Right. No, I've been at John Smith's practice.
Yeah. John Azevedo.
I mean, John Azevedo's practice. Yeah.
Yeah. It was tough.
I worked for John Azevedo for years at the Hitchcock Azevedo camp. And I remember he would work on, I was doing pretty good in college, but he kept show me the posture on a single leg, and like I couldn't get it right. He's like, the posture, put your neck back and arch your back. See here. And I'm like, oh my gosh, dude, this is really hard for me to get the right posture, which is like this much space. I'm a devoted college wrestler, and I like, couldn't get the posture right. You know, it was kind of eye opening. So that's fun. So fast forward now.
Well, we talk about it now. I think he didn't quit because I was supporting him. And you hear those lessons, you tough love, but then you hug them, you know?
Right.
You have to let them know that you love them, that your love is not predicated on them winning or even working like hard in a practice.
Yeah.
You want them to do the best they can, and you point out to them how they could do a little bit more. Behind the scenes, which I had other coaches working on them.
Right.
Because we get home and he'd say, well, Coach Izzy said this about me. Did you talk to him? Oh, no, not at all. What did he say? You know? So I was loading the coaches up to,
of course,
to get him the encouragement that he needed along the way. So it was all a concerted effort, you know, just judging. Like one time he got hurt though.
Yeah.
He fractured his elbow, and I was like, oh, he was on the mat screaming, and I come out and he's looking at me, and I'm like, I said, Adam, if you want to quit wrestling, you can, man. This is because I was pushing him into these tournaments.
Yeah.
And he was getting beat because these kids were just so skilled, and he wasn't. And he didn't know how to turn, and he would just got his arm crunched. And I thought, this isn't right. I'm making him, he's going to get hurt, you know?
Yeah.
And so when I gave him that out to quit, he said, Dad, I'm not quitting. I'm coming back. And I thought, oh.
All right.
So I think I was a little bit lucky, blessed that I had those opportunities to fall the way they did because,
you know
what's going to happen.
Yeah, you don't know.
And same thing with an athlete. You could be coaching Cody, right?
Yeah.
And you could see things.
Yeah.
And you're trying to push, and you don't, you know, even though he's a grown man, you don't know. You just don't know where
the head's at.
How much is too much.
Right.
And when you have to push a little bit more.
Right.
When it's your child and he's only 15, that's different.
Yeah, you want to get arrested as a dad.
That's
yeah.
Child abuse.
I said, get you. You know, it's funny. When I think about this, I think about Jason Welch, who's the coach at San Francisco State. And I was one of these mid-tier guys wrestling that loved wrestling still and transitioned into MMA and became one of the top tier guys in MMA. And during that time, I was doing everything I could to make ends meet. So I was coaching kids. I had TLC, top of the line coaching, and I would work all day, you know, 8 to 10 hours at Davis. And then I would go to Natomas High School and I would go to Vacaville High School and I would go do seminars out in Lincoln. And actually my one of our members, John Flolo, he actually hired me to do one of those seminars out in Lincoln. I was super thankful at the time. It was a couple $100, you know. But Jason Welch, he would come and I enjoyed having him. And he was a high school, couple time high school champion, high school state champion, then a national champion for maybe a national runner up
for Northwestern.
At Northwestern. And now he's the coach at San Francisco State. But his dad was like not a high level wrestler. I think he wrestled, but he was like just super excited that his son wanted to go do all this stuff. Cause it wasn't his dad pushing. He'd be like, and I'd be like, what'd you do? And he's like, you know, I was leaving magazines and camp brochures here and there and hope that he would say something like, oh, you want to go to that? And then like, he was just like a really loving, supportive dad that was like, same thing, kind of like being behind the scenes, pushing the envelope, but that'd be like, that tournament, it's only $500. We can figure that out. We can get that going for you. And then he would like bring him out, you know, find people that he liked. Like Jason and I had a good relationship. He'd come out and bring him to all my little seminars. He'd go to Vacaville and he'd go to Natomas and he'd go to Lincoln, wherever I'd let him know where it was going, and he'd come hang out. But he ended up, I think that's a guy, and I see him coaching his guys in San Francisco State now in the gym. He's got a great attitude mentality for teaching guys, and I've seen a lot of different types of coaches and whatnot, but you know, I think sure, call people on their stuff, but you got to be loving, you got to be supportive, you got to know that there's something there for you even if you don't do what you're supposed to do, you know, and I think that counts. So transition, we'll wrap this thing up here with bringing it all together, talking about basically how wrestling plays into mixed martial arts at this point, and kind of what you talked about earlier today was just, look, it's very apparent that you're not going to have a chance in this sport, even if you're a high-level wrestler. You're asking about somebody specifically who is starting at a certain age with a certain skill set, and it comes down to what, in your opinion? Full commitment?
It has to be a full commitment. And, right. Well, a full commitment if you want to reach your potential.
Right.
Not everybody's potential is going to get them a medal, a right. gold medal, silver. You may not get a medal.
Yeah, right.
But I think, which is what the real reason I wanted my son to wrestle.
That's a great statement, actually, you know. Not to discourage anybody, but there is some factor of that. But we don't get to be the ones that choose that. You got to find that out on your own. And you should be shooting
because I think as human beings, we are at our best emotionally and we feel the best about ourselves when we give a full effort.
Yeah.
And so that's why I wanted my son to wrestle, because he was a little skinny. When this is over, I'll show you pictures of my son.
We'll put some pictures up, Tuss. She's probably already been checking him out. Man.
He was a little skinny guy. He grew late. He was little, short. At 10 years old, he weighed maybe 80 pounds, 10, right. 11, 12, 13. And so I wanted him to get a little tougher because he was living with his mom before he came to live with me. So I thought wrestling would just make
story.
Him tougher.
If you haven't seen
Wrestled Away. The Lee Kemp story.
That's the Lee Kemp story. It's an awesome documentary. I'm actually in the documentary. Talks about Lee's journey, which is, you know, we gotta have the movie made at some point, but it's pretty incredible. But that was a whole different animal where he didn't have you there for him a lot of
times. No, for about 5 years. None of my kids did. Thank God he was the youngest, so I had the best relationship with him.
Yeah.
My daughter, well, they both came in 2010.
Right.
And my son was 10 years old. My daughter was 16. She was a junior in high school. So Adam, for about 3 years, I just didn't make him wrestle, but I asked him every year, hey, you want to wrestle? when he said no, I just backed off, you know, because he was in
You're fifth. Repairing a relationship also.
Yeah, exactly. He was fifth grade. You know, I didn't want them to take him away from me already, you know. Fifth grade, you want to wrestle? Nope. Okay. Sixth grade? Nope. Seventh grade, I thought, if he's ever going to learn this sport, man, he can't. He's got to start now. So
yeah, that's when
I
started.
I pushed a little harder in seventh grade, and he went out. And it was a short season, but he did. He went out, so it was good. And he only lost two matches the whole year. He won the conference, and it stopped after conference, right? But he won it, though. And I thought he's got it. He's got a natural feel for this. Eighth grade, it's like, Adam, when's wrestling season? Oh, I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Aren't you going out? Oh, I haven't decided yet. What do you mean you haven't decided? You have to go out. you spent that whole year last year. So he was giving me this old, like, wishy-washy thing. So I got a little more intense. So he went out, and he only lost one or two matches, won the conference again.
Right.
So, but I saw it was making him tougher. It was making him more confident. You become known in your school. Let's face it. You know, you went conference. The school.
It becomes part of your identity.
Yeah, the school paper, whatever they have going on in the classes, they know who you are. He started to, I could see he could feel the recognition. It made him feel better about himself. So I saw a lot of positive benefits. Maybe that's just sports in general, but I saw a lot of, and then just the rub off of me being a wrestler. Of course, you know, there's some pride there that I wanted him to do it because I did it. And then, but at some point the athlete himself has to take off and decide.
Right.
Because when I gave him the opportunity to quit, and that's a touchy moment.
Yeah.
In our lives, when we give someone an out, we got to be prepared for the answer.
Right.
Because if he said no, then I would have had to just say, okay.
Yeah.
And I've talked to a lot of my friends that have been great wrestlers. Some of their kids, their sons didn't wrestle. Or they tried, but they quit.
I've heard a lot over the years. Because I got a late start in the sport of wrestling. Then I got I did pretty well because I worked my butt off. Then I went to college, was, you know, against all odds, I had a real good career in college, and then I became a coach, and now I moved into the fight world, and then from the fight world, I've become a coach. So it's you know, you hear the word burnt out a lot.
Hmm.
And my I guess response to burnout is, you got to separate, and this is for you guys at home that are maybe feeling burnout. You got to separate the things that you're burnt out from the things that you really, really want and the things that you really, really enjoy and the benefits that you'll get. Because, you know, I've got a beautiful house and a beautiful family, and I've got a cool gym, and I've got, you know, a great life that I envision because I wanted it. But some of the stuff sucks. Cutting 30 pounds to make weight and then, you know, getting your face cut open and having to run until you feel like your lungs are going to burst or your eyes are going to pop out of your face. I would get burned out of that if that's all I was doing. But I wasn't. I was chasing something. You know?
Yes.
I was chasing the things that I want in life. I wanted the notoriety, or I wanted the self-satisfaction, or to be able to feel like I was, you know, on top of the world or whatever it may be, whatever you're chasing. If you're feeling burnout, separate those things that really suck from the things that got you into it, or you're looking at that you're doing the things for. Like, what can I get out of this? And that'll get rid of the burnout side.
Exactly.
Know?
And really, it may not always be what you're gaining from it intrinsically may not be always visible to someone from the outside. Just like the example of that guy that worked out with John Smith. You or I watching that, we would have probably thought, what in the world is he getting out of this? You know? But he talks proudly about it to this day. I mean, he's just really – and I could see why he would be. In his mind, he helped the greatest wrestler America ever had train.
Yeah.
And become that great wrestler.
Yeah, that's a huge accomplishment.
That's like being the sparring partner of Muhammad Ali maybe or somebody, you know?
I have – and I talk about that with our guys on our team for mixed martial arts also. Look, there's a sense of pride stepping into the mat, being part of the team.
Absolutely.
Going through one practice, that's a feather in the cap. Be proud of that. You could take that experience and leave and go on, and you have that. You can always be, I went in there. I, I, I punched Uriah right in the face. He didn't do anything, but, you know, whatever. Or whatever. Then you got guys that have been there for 6 years. I was part of that team for 6 years. That's my good buddy. Like, I can call Uriah right now, and I can call Cody and have him over here. And I actually won this fight. It was awesome. I spent a whole night in Vegas partying, whatever. I remember Derek Burns said he had a great fight out in Vegas, and we had an after party for him and everything. He goes, man, this is like this. That was it for him. He was like,
that's a great memory.
He loved it. He, you know, we're all there with him. I think he lost the fight. He fought in Strikeforce, great fight. And then we had a big party, and it was like, man, this is really cool for him.
That's a great memory, right? Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
And so, you know, all the time you take those feathers in the cap, and you take each experience, and that flows on to whatever you're going to do next, right? And then the journey stops when you want it to stop, and it starts another place. But you always take those lessons and move on. So I like that about it. So we're going to wrap this up, guys, to be, you know, we can always have Coach Kemp back on. He's a great resource for us. And, you know, if you have a chance to watch Wrestled Away, the Lee Kemp story, you got to see it. If you're ever looking for a great motivational speaker or a great coach to give some mentoring, Coach Kemp, where can they find you? On
just my website at leekemp.com.
Leekemp.com. And I appreciate the insight on wrestling. I mean, you can't get a better – Coach said, what's the topic of the podcast today? I said, it's wrestling. You know anything about it? He goes – yeah, I know a little bit about wrestling. I know a little wrestling. But it's great to talk to you. It's great to catch up, and we'll do this again soon. Thanks, guys. MMAU, tune in for next time.
Thank you.